you. Okay, now one group of people who are not caught in the Mercator trap are the folk who work on the International Polar Year. Rian Salmon and Matt Nolan. I'll introduce Rian and Matt now. Rian is the Education and Outreach Coordinator for the International Polar Year. She's based in Cambridge in the United Kingdom, and Matt Nolan's at University of Alaska. These guys have pulled together not just this brief introduction, where they're also going to introduce the special domes, but also Matt is coordinating the Friday afternoon session with the six virtual globes. So welcome to you both. Matt, I know, Rian, I know you know Bob, so thank you for fitting Bob in there. Welcome.
Hi. Is that better? Can you hear me? My name's Rianne. I know we're running a little bit over time, so I'll just... Hey, there we go. So my name's Rianne. I work for the International Polar Year. Let me move this. My training's as an Antarctic atmospheric chemist. Matt, who's up here on stage with us, is a glaciologist from the University of Alaska. There are some other people in the room here. Andrew Fleming's at the back there from the British Antarctic Survey. Just grabbed the photo yesterday. I could have got a polar shot for you. Stefan Geens is also with us. He's helping us with trying to... One thing is how we're going to present polar research using tools like Google Earth and the, you know, digital arenas that we are here at this conference to discuss. We're also working with our partners, David Herrings here from NASA, Frank Niepold from NOAA and their colleagues. And I'm afraid I didn't get a logo, but our friends from Illuminati, who have the domes which are over in the exhibition space, I'd really encourage all of you to go and go inside those domes and see what's on show there, because they're a really impressive way of showing how we can use data for communication and bringing across really amazing concepts that are very difficult to explain in words, but you can sort of experience in a sort of immersive way. But the reason why I'm here is to talk about the International Polar Year, which, can I just see a rough show of hands? I can't really see very much at all, actually. Who here has heard of, no, I'll ask it a different way. Who here has not heard of the International Polar Year? Okay, that's great. It's quite a few of you. That's fantastic. So not for much longer. By the end of this talk, you will have all heard of the International Polar Year. It's actually the fourth International Polar Year. Just a little bit of historical background here. Oh, that's not 850. That should be 1850. We've got a 200-year time scale. The first polar year was in 1882-3. It was a visionary of a guy called Karl Weyprecht, who understood that in order to understand the Arctic, we really need to have international collaboration. And this was a real visionary. I know this year we have the, you know, international year of whatever it is every other year, or, you know, many of them within a year. But this was the first international collaborative scientific research year. You cannot understand what's happening in the Canadian Arctic if you're not also studying the Russian Arctic. There were 12 stations established in the Arctic at that time, two in the sub-Antarctic. There were 700 men involved. At that point, there weren't very many women in science. It was a fantastic effort, but the reality is they didn't share their data. They didn't really talk about it very much afterwards, and so you ended up having lots of individual expedition results. But they learned from this. The second IPY, 50 years later, was 1932-3, and they really understood that in order to get full impact out of doing science at the same time in the same places, you have to share your data, you have to talk to each other. This was bigger still. There were 40 nations involved, both poles. This was a lot of science came out of this year. A big focus on meteorology, on communication, radio science, some really fundamental issues which we now take for granted, especially in the field of communication, came out of this year, even though it was economically very tight. It was in the time of the Great Depression, and a lot of the data analysis was hindered because of the Second World War. Nevertheless, everyone realized it was a fantastic, not only opportunity, but it was really a great step increase in our understanding. And in 1957-8 was the third International Polar Year, also known as the International Geophysical Year, which some of you may have heard of. This really was huge. 67 nations involved, 50 new stations established in the Antarctic, an awful lot of long-term monitoring began at this point of data sets that were now familiar to us, things like the ozone hole, carbon dioxide measurements, that kind of stuff, started in the 1950s, and it's the reason why we have a 50-year record of a lot of data, which is critical at the moment for understanding the changing climate. And that brings us to the fourth International Polar Year, which we're at now, and which I've come here to talk to you about. I know I'm rushing through it a bit, but I know you've got coffee waiting for you soon. So this polar year is actually 2 years long. We just like to confuse people from the offset. But the reason is actually logical. In order to do a proper polar field season, just think about this logistically, they're not easy places to get to. As the people who were speaking earlier on the pole to pole expedition know, logistically you have to go in the summer. If you're a scientist, you want to go in early, hopefully in the summer, but often weather conditions are going to sort of dictate when you can get in. You want to go in, set up your equipment, take measurements throughout the summer, throughout the long, dark winter, through into the next summer. In order to get a full annual data set, you actually need 18 months, summer, winter, summer. And to give both the Arctic and the Antarctic a fair shot at it, you obviously need to have 18 months for the Arctic and for the Antarctic total. That lasts 2 years. So it's just started in March 2007. It's going to run through to March 2009, and I'm very confident we're going to see a ripple effect. It's not going to be over at that point. Now, this chart, you're not expected to read anything on here. I've just faded it in to warn you what's coming. This is a chart that we use it started as an internal kind of logistic way of trying to understand just how big this thing is and how everything connects to everything else within IPY. What we have here, just the main thing to take out, is that every hexagon on this chart is one large international collaborative research project, often interdisciplinary, often involving several tens to hundreds of people, several countries. By normal year standards, any one of these projects would be considered a real big effort. We have over 200 of them. They're roughly sorted by those which are in the Arctic. Let me figure out how I do this laser thing here. Arctic, Antarctic, projects which look at the relationship between the two. And then they're very broadly put across by the discipline, earth, land, people, ocean, ice, atmospheres, which you're looking at here. The main things to notice, with this International Polar Year, there's a big focus. We work with a lot of people who live in the Arctic. A lot of indigenous communities are our partners, they're project leaders. There's also a big focus on education outreach. Every science project who signed up for this has agreed to get involved in education outreach as well. And importantly for the science community, everyone who's a part of IPY has agreed to share their data with each other, which is a phenomenal thing. So there are some statistics for you. It's big. So the reason why we're here is to say now how do we as the scientific community, how do we try and explain what we're doing and why we're doing and why we think it's important? It's so massive and we have these really quite horrible looking charts. Well, the way we begin is, for instance, I might say, well, where does my science fit in? I'm an atmospheric chemist. The work which I do would fit well into the ocean ice atmosphere project, but it's also directly related to ice core science. And I could have picked out 6 or 7 other projects which it also directly related to. This is one of the things, this was me in Antarctica with my lab. One of the things I did every month was dig a big hole, take some samples of snow at different depths. And the reason was we were looking at how molecules fit into the snow, come in and out of the snow with time, eventually trying to understand how they get trapped in ice cores. And I will play this. This is the sound of 150,000-year-old ice. Can you hear it? I wasn't sure if there'd be sound, but anyway. The reason why I did my research was ultimately to try and understand help us understand what the bubbles in the ice, what that message means. And it was really great. Bob Carell, I thought he might, showed you some ice core data. Here's our methane record from ice cores. That's methane concentration at the moment. In three slides, we've gone from someone's life to the science which they're doing and why they're doing it. Normally, those three slides would take about 45 minutes, and we'd talk about climate change. But But I could have talked about reindeer herders. I could have talked about how the auroras in the two hemispheres interlink with each other, about a big census of marine life, iceberg carving. It's fantastic. Bob talked about a lot of this stuff, weather monitoring, geology, geomorphology, plates and gates, history, exploration, the lives of Antarctic researchers. They go diving, they live down there. This is a girl from Siberia who's helping. She's taking samples every 2 weeks for a researcher, and she lives near the Lena River, and she's taking samples with her dad, who's a fisherman. The education projects, the youth network. I would really encourage all the people who were so active yesterday and who are here today in the audience to get involved with the IPY Youth Network, which is a fantastic way that we're working together with the students, with people to say, we want to make a difference now, we want to be involved now in the decisions which are being made. We want to have the training to be the best scientists, to be the best decision makers, but we also want our concerns today listened to right now. So that sort of brings me to the end. This, if we just had a sort of elevator speech, as they call it, we would say these are our key IPY messages, which we would like to work with you in this room on how to help bring these messages to the world at large. You're the experts. You've got the ideas. In the way that the science is very much a grassroots thing, very bottom-up, you've got scientists, 50,000 scientists, 63 countries, people from around the world doing their science, working together, sharing. Our outreach is also a very grassroots thing. It's not top-down. If you've got an idea, if you'd like to work with us, come and talk to us. We work with the experts, we work with the brokers, and you're the ones who know how to reach the community, the people who are going to listen. So really, I would say at this conference, what we're doing here, and there's a lot of us here, is to say, how can we use Digital Earth? What are the ideas about there? What can we capitalize on? There's all sorts of ideas, but please, you know, get in touch with us and get involved. That's us. That's me.
Do you wanna... Matt, thank you. Thank you, Ian.
So my name is Matt Nolan, and I study glaciers in the Arctic and Antarctic. And I'm involved with IPY outreach quite a lot. And I just wanted to make really just one quick point about IPY outreach. That, yeah, there's hundreds of projects, and we'd like everyone to know what's going on and help the community. But there's some really basic things that we'd also like to accomplish during this IPY. So I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. Does anyone, can I just see, indulge me for a show of hands, does anyone know where Alaska is? Just, okay, keep your hands up. Now, which direction from here is Alaska? Okay, I see this way, that way, this way. Well, it's not surprising that, it's actually surprising to me that anyone would know where Alaska is due to this Mercator disease that Bob alluded to. Here we have Alaska in Mexico. So south of here. Here we have it southwest of here. Here we have it a little more southwest. It's shrunk a little bit, being a red state. Here we have it just off the coast of California. My favorite, appended onto Seattle itself. Not to mislead you anymore, but we can also put it in Canada, Eastern Canada, Western Canada. I haven't found yet any on the East Coast, but I'm sure if I spent another 2 minutes on the internet, I probably would. So one of the things that we want to do is sort of accomplish some basic geography lessons during IPY. Where is Alaska? Where is the Arctic? Where is the Antarctic? What does the Antarctic look like? Can you tell me what it looks like based on a map like this? This is a major issue, and as Bob said, we tend to ignore, or I think the populace tends to ignore the poles simply because it's not represented well by a paper map. This is kind of a lousy stolen image off the web, but this is Buckminster Fuller's projection, probably the most accurate rendition of the size and shape, relative size and shape of continents, but which way is east and west is kind of a mystery with a map like this, but at least he got the sizes and shape rights. Globes are useful in some cases, but you know the problem is you see they always put the holder for the globe through the poles, and then there's usually this little cap that just completely covers Arctic and Antarctic, so still it's somewhat of a mystery as to where these things are. Actually, the best globe I've seen is the nice folks at the 3D or 3D Connection have a little pen with a globe on it. It's the first time I've seen a globe skewered where it should be, sort of through zero latitude and longitude through, you know, the Pacific Ocean. So you can actually see the poles on both sides. It's very nice of them to do that, I thought. So I got involved early on with virtual globes, sort of long before Google Earth was around. But one of the our major outreach tools for IPY is virtual globe technology, because here, as you can see, a screenshot from Google Earth, you can accurately locate the Arctic, the Antarctic, see the relative sizes, the relative distance, direction from wherever you live. You can go from your backyard, see your backyard in the context of a tool like this, and then fly to the Arctic and see the Arctic in it now in a context that you might understand.
That's your bell, Matt.
It's my bell that I loaned him. I should have waited a few more minutes. So I'm basically done. I just want to say one more word about why I'm here. A year ago, I held what I call the first annual Virtual Globe Scientific Users Conference, and Dr. Tim Forsman was the keynote for that. And at that meeting, we decided to have the second annual meeting sort of co-convene with this. And my vision of what these meetings are about is to put users together with users, so the real people doing stuff with these tools to help each other, learn from each other, to get developers, you know, sort of the Google, Microsoft, et cetera, developers together, to get them talking together for our benefit, hopefully, and their benefit, and then have users and developers talking together. So what you'll see in the next two afternoons are a variety of sessions, thematically based sessions on education and health and natural hazards using virtual globe technology. And then on Friday afternoon, we're convening a session that's going to get developers together in a panel sitting right here, having them talk to each other, having you being able to ask questions for basically the whole afternoon to try and, yeah, get us all closer together and have us work together, try and make new partnerships for Digital Earth and helping our planet with the technologies that we have. And I think that's all for me. Okay. And I just mentioned that we have an IPY session tomorrow afternoon. And the domes, as Rhianne and a few other people have alluded to, the domes in the other room have a lot of IPY content, and you can snag any one of us, and we can walk you through some of that, or if you have questions. So thanks very much, and enjoy the coffee.
Thank you.